Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Eerie Encounters, Volume 2, Story 1. The scariest thing I can recall outdoors was when I was about 4 years old, not yet going to school. My parents had just bought a rundown farm in then rural New Jersey. This was about 1947, 1948, backed up to hundreds of acres of rich estates with empty woodlands. There were packs of wild dogs known to be running back there. This particular day was cold and gray. My dad was at work in town. My mom was busy in the house with my little sister and baby brother, and I was playing about 50 yards down the laneway in a sandy spot with my toy rake, shovel, and pail. Another 50 yards further, where the laneway turned left downhill toward the dirt road, was a large multifloral rose bush. The place was generally overgrown, weedy. From behind the rose bush, a large, tan, long-legged animal emerged and just stood there. I was intrigued. I'd seen a few deer before in a park and thought, this must be a mommy deer because it has no horns. I walked towards it, mesmerized. The animal was staring intently at me. Then, what everybody calls that feeling came over me. I threw my little rake at it, and it turned and disappeared. It was not a deer at all, but a large crossbred feral dog, like a Great Dane with a more pointed muzzle. Its predatory stare had struck that feeling of fear into me, and I thank God my feeble show of resistance had caused it to change its mind about having me for dinner. We were only 40 miles south as a crow flies across the bay from New York City, but it was rural then. The farm was full of quail, pheasant, foxes, some deer and wild trout in the swift, spring-fed brook. It was where I began my love for the woods and wild things. All that changed, and it is now suburbia. The brook was ruined long ago by a subdivision built on the spring source, Progress. I went back once just after we were married to show my husband, and regretted it ever since. So changed, but back to the purpose of the story. The next year, a group of state troopers eradicated the wild dogs because of the menace they posed to residents and farmers. In all my life, Blue Ridge Mountains, backcountry Florida, Idaho, Alaska, wherever, I don't think I've ever had another encounter with wildlife that felt as threatening as this one. Story number 2. I've lived in Florida, California, Texas, Tennessee, and now Kentucky, where I spent a lot of time out in the woods. A few years ago, I was out with a friend of mine at a wildlife management area that was a few minutes out of town in Florida. It was later in the evening, and after making our way through the terrain, we decided to head back for beer and pizza as it was getting dark fast. I brought my German Shepherd, Pippo and Ziga, or just Pippo for short, as I called him, and he brought his blue heeler. They had been annoying groundhogs and chasing birds most of the day, which meant they were tired as we were walking back. At one point, I got paranoid. I don't like to call it that, but my senses got sharper, and I had this bad feeling like we were being watched. I'd felt that before, but it was so intense that I said I could feel the heat of whatever it was, the something, staring at us. We had concealed pistols that we always carried and several knives, but that didn't make me feel any better. At first, I just brushed it off, but when our dog started getting spooked and kept looking behind us, we both got on edge. Boar were all over the region. Coyotes had been reported in the area, and there were plenty of crocodiles. As a matter of fact, we saw one earlier, but this felt different. Both our dogs would stop and look behind us every few minutes. They would move their heads around like they were trying to focus on a sound while pacing around, but they never growled or barked. At this time, we were in a large opening that was adjacent to the main trail that led through the rest of the forest and back to the parking area. Behind us were swaths of forest, swamp, and heavy brush that was a pain to move in, but we had traveled through it. If something moves in that stuff, you can hear it, even from a mile away, especially on a quiet day like this. No wind, humid and clear skies.
We both stopped and just stared at the tree line for a few minutes. We held onto our dogs' collars and just sat there crouched in the middle of the field, but the whole time it felt like something was staring directly at us and wasn't flinching. Like I stated previously, I've been stalked plenty of times, and I know the feeling. This feeling was the most intense feeling I've ever really felt in my life. It wasn't exactly gut-wrenching terror, but my eyes were watering, and my adrenaline was flowing. On the way back, we heard snapping branches and the occasional bird flying away, but it was the longest 3 miles that I've ever walked. We got back to the cruiser and found that the gravel around the car had been disrupted. There weren't any tracks, but something had definitely moved around the car in a circle from what we could tell. The gravel looked different in the sense that it had been disturbed way more than when we first parked, and only around the vehicle. The dash cam didn't show anything, and on later visits, neither one of us saw, felt, or heard anything out of the ordinary. Now, another story is one a friend of mine in Kentucky told me of, a story from his childhood. His dad lived in the sticks, in the part of the state where there was nobody out there, and he'd been out there for a few years. He vaguely remembers them seeing hairy people, a woman, two children, and what looked like a teenager, that used to come around their house. They didn't have any clothes and didn't look human, but walked just like a normal person would. They would leave food out, which they would eat, but mostly the things would just stare at them from a distance before running back into the woods. There aren't many legends or stories from that time which match it, which is weird. I can't think of a reason why he would lie, and he plays it off as something he doesn't want to talk about. And to tell you the truth, I don't doubt that it is all truthful. Story number 3. I was 14 and had just gotten a rescue dog. She was a 3-year-old breeder, white Siberian husky. She had 2 different colored eyes, blue and brown. I thought this was the coolest thing ever, as at that point, I'd never heard of such a thing. I was outside barefoot most of the time because I preferred the feeling of no shoes over the restrictiveness of shoes. While in my yard, I was watching my new dog attempt to get at the woodland creatures in the forest at the edge of my yard. She was on a cable, and I thought she'd not be able to get away. Lo and behold, she ran really fast and turned at the last second, and her collar popped off around her head. Needless to say, it took less than 2 seconds for her to go chase some poor rabbit. In the process of chasing her through the woods barefoot, I managed to step on the one flower in the whole dang place, and there was a bee in it. Well, Mr. Bee wasn't so excited about the whole thing and stung the bottom of my foot. My dog managed to corral herself into an old fenced-off area, and I got a hold of her. So I'm carrying my dog through the woods, probably 30 or 40 yards off my family's portion of the forest, and I get the feeling, you know, like I'm being watched. I look around frantically trying to figure it out, and I see a guy, probably mid-30s, just standing there, a solid 100 yards away, staring at me like I'm food. I'm not sure if this is his property or if he's just standing there trespassing like me. I notice he has a golf club held up on his shoulder. No golf course for 20 miles and way too far in the forest to have just knocked the ball in there. He's obviously not golfing. He starts walking towards me with his goofy grin, like a 6-year-old on Christmas. I set my dog down, and we both start sprinting away from this crazy-looking guy. While I'm not sure she wasn't running away from me, running at her, I knew I had to get away from this potential lunatic. My foot was swelling up pretty good by now, and I'm in some pain. Not too much to stop running, but enough to be annoying. I turn back, and he's jogging after me a little. Obviously in a hurry, but a little out of shape. I make it back to my yard and run at the house, and my dog follows me right in, and the man stands at the edge of my yard, just staring at me. I ran upstairs and grabbed my BB gun and ran back down, and he was gone. So I'm hoping at that point he won't come back. I never saw the guy again. Went on missions with my friends to try and find him after that. We were all loaded up with pointed sticks and knives, and we even left traps on the borders of the property, about face high for an adult. Swinging branches, nothing fatal. Never found out what was going on, and we moved shortly after that. Pretty terrifying for me. Next story. A friend of mine owns a 1,000-acre ranch in South Texas, about 30 miles northeast of Eagle Pass. He had 8 deer feeders on his ranch. People pay big money to come to Texas to shoot a trophy buck. Anyway, his ranch hand got a cold and he needed someone down there to do the chores and watch the place. I offered to help and he hired me to go down there for the weekend. He's got 8 feeders on the land and 8 deer blinds. One of the duties I had was to go out in the morning and the evening and do a head count of the deer. The big bucks are tagged and the price he charges for the deer is based on the number of points. Well, one evening I went out around 5 p.m. to the blinds. It was a beautiful day, and as the sun started to go down, the feeders kicked on. I started the count when the deer came out to feed on the corn. He sure does have some nice buck down there. The deer finished feeding as the sun finally set. In December, the sun goes down really fast, and I found myself in the dark. All the deer had gone back to the thicket, and I was just about to call it a night when I heard something in the brush behind the blind. I thought the deer had finished feeding, but perhaps they were coming back out for another round. I closed the door to the blind and looked out the window to see if there was more coming to eat. I grabbed my spotlight to see if I could get any shines. I saw nothing. The sound was louder and I knew it was right by the blind. I looked out the window again, but the spotlight decided to take a dump and would not turn on. I forgot to charge it up before going out and the battery had died down. Knowing I would not be able to see anything in the dark, I decided to just go ahead on leave until I heard what I thought sounded like a low-pitched growl. I know what a deer grunt sounded like, and this was much lower pitched. Whatever I heard was still outside of the blind, and now I could hear it pacing back and forth below me. The noise sounded like a purr growl. I had heard of people seeing large cats in South Texas, but knew they were rare to see. I decided I would hold up in the blind for the night and I'd take a chance with having a run-in in the dark with a cougar. As I started to doze off, I could still hear the purring outside the blind, although I could not see the animal. The next day, I woke up to the sound of the feeders going off. I couldn't hear the sound I heard the night before and decided it was safe to go out. I saw cat prints all around the blind, and I knew I was right about what I heard. I got in the Polaris and went back to the lodge. I made sure to charge the spotlight up when I got back and made sure I had my rifle with me when I went out from then on. Next story. I've never considered myself to be sensitive to the paranormal. I'm the kind of guy who thinks that there are logical explanations for most things people consider to be supernatural or paranormal. I do, however, admit that there are things that happen that cannot be explained, cataloged, categorized, or easily referenced. What I'm about to tell you is something I have never been able to get an explanation for. When I was a boy, my grandmother used to tell me stories about her childhood and what it was like growing up in the mountains. Now, my grandmother is about as pure a soul as I think one could be. She has a heart of gold, would never tell a lie, or have any reason to lie. She's a devout Christian and loves the Lord. She's the kind of woman who would do anything for anybody, even a complete stranger. That being said, a couple of her stories have me stumped. One story. My grandmother and her best friend as a child used to go to this feed store early in the mornings to get their flour and cornmeal. They had this little red wagon that they would use to haul the sacks back in. Well, the only way to get around back then was by horse or on foot. The feed store was about 2 miles from their homestead. They would usually have to leave early in the morning while it was still dark out to get there when it opened. One morning while it was still dark, they started off. It had rained the night before, so there was a thin layer of fog in the air. My grandmother said that her and her friend were skipping along when they saw the figure of a man in the distance. As it got closer, they could clearly see he was walking in their direction. Both of them saw this man. He was wearing a suit and had a cane. He looked like he was dressed for a party. As they got closer and closer to him, he noticed them too and was looking right at them. He was whistling as he walked, almost like he was strolling through a park. Got to the point where they were close enough to say good morning to him, and they did. Just as they were about to pass the man on foot, he vanished. Both of them looked behind them to see if he'd gone off the road somewhere or up in the woods, but he was gone. Like nobody had ever been there at all. How does a person who you're watching just disappear? I've tried over and over to come up with a logical explanation for this, but I've not been able to. The second story my grandmother told me was also when she was a little girl, 10 years old, I believe it was. Anyway, she told me this story about an old man that lived way back up in the woods she and her friends used to play in. She and her friends were playing one day, came across what looked like to be an abandoned cabin. They went over to play in it, but found that someone still lived there. That's when they met this old man. She said he was a kind man and gave her and her friend apples from the two trees he had. She said they would go there to hear him tell stories, and said they had watched them levitate off the ground time and time again. One day, they went to go meet the old man, and as they came to the clearing where his cabin was, it was gone. There was nothing there, and the whole area was grown up with trees. They were certain that they were in the exact spot where they had met him the first time, only this time there was no indication that anyone had ever lived there. The soil had not been disturbed. There were no trails leading off or tracks of any kind. The only thing that they did find were two little apple tree saplings. My grandmother swears up and down that this actually happened. Again, I have no logical explanation for either of these events, even now. Next story. When I was about 15, myself, four or five other boys from church in our little northeast Texas town decided to go camping out at a ranch belonging to one of the boys' granddad. We picked the very southeast corner of the ranch that happened to be the most remote, wild, and wooded. We pitched camp in a little copse of oak trees not too far from the south end. All around this small bunch of trees was open pasture with the closest woods about 200 yards east. Just inside these closet woods was a dry creek bed about 20 feet wide with a nice sandy bottom. On the other side of the creek, the woods were so thick a cottontail couldn't get through. Between sawbriar's brush, honey locust, and bois d'arc, it was all but impenetrable. Well, after we got camp set up and cooked something, it came up a gully washer and rained for about 3 hours. Everything was a mess, but we did get most of it cleaned and dry before dark. That night, all of us boys were sitting around the fire talking and bragging about girls we knew and girls we wanted to know. I happened to look up at the woods and I spotted a light. Pointing it out to the other guys, we got to watching it. The one boy whose granddad owned the place said it was probably coon hunters. The thing was, though, we never heard a dog. The light was just barely inside the woods and was definitely between the creek and the fence, which was only about a 30-foot strip. These woods were 4 square miles, so about 2 miles to a side. Like I said, we were on the south end, and I first noticed light right by the south fence. We hollered at whoever it was to come over to our camp, but never got a response. Now we were getting a little spooked. Getting chills telling this? Anyhow, we watched that light till it was plumb out of sight. All night long, we speculated on who it was and what they were doing. Needless to say, we didn't sleep a wink and kept a white man fire going all night long. The next morning, we all went to investigate. We ended up walking out that whole side and never saw a track. The ground was still wet, and we left tracks but never saw any but our own. We walked in a skirmish line between the fence and creek so as not to miss anything, nothing. When we got to the far end, we tried coming back down on the far side of the creek, but couldn't. It was just too thick. That afternoon, the one kid's granddad came out to check on us, and we were about to burst to tell him that someone was out in his place. He asked a lot of questions, and very specific questions at that. When we told him when and where and all that, he just kind of grinned and said, "Well, you saw old Mr. So-and-so. Can't remember the name now." And then he told us this story. In the late 1800s, there once was a small community about a quarter mile south of where we were camped. One day in this small town, a traveling sideshow came to town to try and sell some type of elixir. The salesman, in order to attract customers from out in the country, hauled with him 2 orangutans. One day, after he got set up, he went to clean their cage. When he opened the big cage, the door and one of them hit the bars, which in turn hit the old man and knocked him out. The monkeys took off. Just on the north end of the community was a small farm, and the orangutans, when they passed, came upon a brother and sister who apparently spooked them, and the monkeys killed them by breaking their necks. The kid's mother saw the whole thing. The church bells were ringing, and people came in from all over and formed a posse to look for and kill the primates. By this time it was getting dark, and the owner grabbed his lantern and headed north along the creek to look. He wanted to recapture the orangutans and get out of town before they were killed. The next morning, everyone came back, all except the traveling salesman. The townspeople struck out again to look for him. They found him with a broken neck and deep gouge marks about 2 miles down the creek. The monkeys were never seen again, although every once in a while someone would see an unexplainable lantern light going along the creek. My friend's granddad owned this place, and this story took place when his granddad was a kid. He'd been to town to see the monkeys, but happened to be at home about a mile away when they escaped. When the Great Depression came along, this little community dried up and died, and my friend's family bought all the land, and since then it's been pretty much sealed off. My buddy's granddad said he had seen that light when he was a kid, and that's when his granddad told him what happened that day. Now, did we see a 100-year-old ghost that night? I don't know, and neither do any of the other boys. I do know that we saw light that night. I also know that the old man wasn't telling a tall tale. That just wasn't his style. Too, I know that a traveling show lost 2 orangutans in that area in the late 1800s. I asked my family if they had ever heard that story, but being due to time passing and not being from that vicinity, they couldn't recall many details that their grandparents had passed on. So ask yourself, who was holding that lantern? The traveling salesman or the orangutans? Next story. In 93, my buddy and I headed to Colorado for our first archery elk hunt. We planned to hunt the Flat Tops Wilderness area near Sheriff's Reservoir. We arrived at the parking area near the reservoir in the late evening. We ate and tried to get some sleep, planning on backpacking into the Flat Tops at first light and setting up a tent spike camp to get away from the day hunters and the car campers. Neither of us could sleep since we were so excited. After tossing around for a few hours, we decided to pack up and get an extra early start. I had good topographical maps, and there was an established trail along the creek that fed the reservoir. We packed in for about an hour in the dark before the altitude, which was thin air and heavy backpack, took its toll. After stumbling a couple of times, we decided to find a place to rest until the day break and so we could see the trail obstacles better. We came to a meadow along the stream with a large flat rock. We set our packs and our bows down and reclined on the rock, astounded at the clear sky and phenomenal number of stars we could see. We laid there barely whispering, not wanting to disturb the beautiful silence of the place, just staring at the sky. After a few minutes, we noticed a steady light moving across the sky. Was it a satellite? It was brighter than any stars and moved across the sky about the same speed as a passenger jet would. We both watched it, and we were wondering what it could be when it stopped moving. Dead. We were watching it, discussing it, if it would have changed directions and was now moving directly towards or away from us, so it only appeared to have stopped. After several minutes, the light suddenly took off and a bright streak across the sky and was gone. There was no period of acceleration. It went from zero to streak speed instantly. We both exclaimed, "Did you see that?" at the same time. It was sort of like a falling star, only faster, and it appeared to be going up and away and not towards Earth. The direction it took off in was not along the original path. I've never seen anything come close to moving across the sky that fast. Next story. I've spent 90% of my life in the bush, hunting, fishing, hiking, trapping, etc. It's not unusual of me to stay out a few days just curling up near a log building, a small fire, and calling it good for the night. I've done that since I could get away without my mom flipping a nut about it, so probably about since I was 15, and my dad wouldn't say much when we'd go to the cabin. Fast forward to last summer. I was at my buddy's place in northern Michigan. There was about 15 of us. I decided to go for a hike down a deer trail to a large 500 or 600 acre patch of conifers and stay the night. As I got about 50 miles out, a storm set in, and it was already beginning to get dark to add to the storm, so it was pretty well dark. I figured I'd go to some caves I knew about a mile from where I was, because it'd be a lot quicker shelter than back to camp. It was about 8 when I made that call. I took the fork in the trail that would have led off to the caves and was on my way when I got that feeling of being stalked. I took my 480 out of the holster, just in case, and kept on the trail to the caves. Got there without incident and got comfortable for the night. Fast forward to about 2 in the morning, I had a dream about my dad hollering at me to get the F up now, and I woke immediately in a pouring sweat, as he's been dead since 08. I grabbed the gun and flashlight and shone around outside to see what was going on, because I had that feeling again. I couldn't see nothing, but I could faintly hear movement in every direction from the entrance, so I figured wolves and decided I should go out the back way and cut through the woods back to camp. Stupid as hell, I know, but I didn't have a very clear head at the time, so I fired a shot off before I headed out to try to spook whatever was there from following me any further. I got turned around at some point because I soon saw the caves again. But here's where it gets completely insane. I saw 4 or 5 figures near the entrance to them that appeared to be dogs, but about 3 times the size of your average wolf. It could have just been their glimmer off in the creek in the moonlight, but I hit that trail fast and got the hell out of there. When I got back to camp, nobody believed me. So I said, fine, well, I'll go to the caves and I'll show you the tracks, and off we went. We all had our rifles, so I felt much better about going back. The caves are narrow, so just me and my buddy Danny went in. There were no tracks where I saw the creatures, just packed soil, weird for the area, but nothing threw up an alarm. Everyone kind of laughed at me and shrugged it off. Now, go forward a few months to opening day of gun season. Dan said he was going to hunt a trail fork near the creek, and I went to a stand of spruce about half a mile from him. About 9, I hear him shoot, and about 10 minutes later, a 7-point comes running by me and stopped just in time for me to get a shot. We met each other, drugged the deer to the main trail, and he waited there while I went to get the quad. When I got back, he looked petrified and ghost white. Pale, he said. He felt extremely uneasy, and he was hearing things, but it wasn't a feeling like wolf stalking. It was like a feeling like his life was in serious danger. The same feeling I had back during the summer. So we got the deer loaded on the quad and hauled ass. We got back to camp and then decided we were done hunting there. After that, we went back to get our tree stands. As soon as we pulled to the trail crossing, we heard a howl unlike anything I've ever heard. And needless to say, those stands are probably still hanging, because neither of us had built up the nerve to go back. When we told some of the old-timers about it, they just kind of got quiet and changed the subject. Could they have known something we didn't? Absolutely. But I don't think I really want to know what it was. So we just avoid that whole area in general and have had no more incidents. Next story. I've been stationed overseas most of my military career, and at my first duty station in Japan, there wasn't a lot to do but go to the local bars. Out of the blue one day, I tell a buddy of mine, whom I'll call E from here on out, hey, let's go ghost hunting. He agrees to and proceeds to tell his wife, and she immediately is like, no, no, hell no. Eventually we convince her, and we were under the impression that she would be going with us, apparently. She was just giving E permission to go. Now, this woman's mother owns 2 small bars in an area called Sailor Town, which is basically the bar district of Sasebo, Japan. E's wife told us to bring 2 of the bar girls as sort of guides for our ghost hunting. So now it's E, another buddy who I will call Baby J, the 2 bar girls, and myself, all crammed into E's little Toyota. So we head off into the hills, where we go to find some cliffs where apparently There is one famous area where a lot of young couples went to commit suicide because their parents would not let them marry or be in a relationship with their boyfriend or girlfriend. Japan is pretty civilized, with good roads, beer vending machines everywhere, and of course, convenience stores everywhere. But the hills sure were eerily quiet. As our adventure progressed, the first weird thing I see is a block of fog. Fog isn't normally creepy to me, but my imagination is pretty wild. I always think of my current situation as if, what if this were a movie? Odd thing about the fog was that it was literally shaped like a giant square tile, and maybe 6 to 8 feet high. Kind of weird, but still explainable by logic, right? We then get to the Cliff Hill area where apparently these suicides occurred. So E hops out of his car, followed by baby J. At this point, the two girls refused to get out of the car, so I figured it was my duty to stay in there and protect them. Just outside of the base of the cliff is a small parking area and a bathroom where the lights hadn't been working, so it's pretty dark in the parking area. The headlights are illuminating the bathroom, and the two boys walk over there to check it out. At this point, me and one of the girls decide to spook them a bit and turn the headlights off. It doesn't faze them at all. Nothing lighters, cell phones won't fix, right? But when we turn the car headlights back on, maybe 6 or 7 seconds later, apparently the other girl saw something and then had her scared so bad, she grabs me. This girl speaks almost no English and is so shook up, she won't open her eyes. I'm creeped out, not because I saw or felt anything, but because I really have never seen someone so terrified before the way this woman was. A few seconds later, the boys get back to the car and we decide to go from there to the actual Cliff Hill part where the trees and stuff are. The girls refuse, but have to follow, otherwise be stuck in the car alone. The girl that was shook up was trembling so bad for the next 10 minutes or so, she literally could not walk more than 5 yards at a time without falling over. Her knees were shaking that bad. We looked around a bit, found the hill boring, and hopped back into the car. We're headed back home. A light drizzle starts coming down, and E finds a nice dark side road and decides to check it out. I'm thinking, what if this were a movie again, and think, what if the car dies? And sure enough, the windshield wipers slowly lose their consistent speed, and the car dies. I'm not too thrilled, nor is anyone else. Thinking about pushing a car in the dark on a quiet side road in the hills while getting wet, I mean, we still had some drinking to do soon after, right? So we finally get back to town. As we're walking to one of the bars that E's mother-in-law owns, a medium-sized black dog is staring us down, his tail wagging slow and aggressively and barking in a slow, calm manner. I tell the boys, check out that dog. He never barked at us before. We then go about the usual drinking in the bars. The next day, E tells me when he got home, his mother-in-law took one look at him and told him to turn around and get out of the house. Proceeded to place salt at her doorstep. Salt wards off spirits, according to the Japanese. And she told him, you went ghost hunting, didn't you? He replied, yeah, so? And she answers that she had one follow him home, hence the salt she placed at the door. When he told me this, it reinforced my feeling of when the dog started barking at us, since it never did before. In my culture, like many, we believe dogs see spirits. He also came down with a fever the next few days. I don't know what the Japanese believe, but in my culture we also believe that contact with spirits, at least bad ones, often do get people sick, whether it be a fever or even a full-blown possession. I didn't see any spirits that night, or feel any firsthand, but the events that happened around me to the group I was with led me to believe they were there. The thing that spooked me the most really was how that young Japanese girl was so spooked after we cut the headlights back on. It led me to believe she actually might have been seeing something.